Bruce Museum, Greenwich Hospital. Whether it's art, music, local events, and parties, let my friends become your friends. Join me, Darby and Friends, 1490 WGCH and WGCH.com anywhere.
The opinions expressed in our talk shows are not necessarily those of the staff, management, or ownership of WGCH Radio.
Welcome to Defiant Hustle Radio. This is Noreen Ehrlich, and I have a really great show for you this evening. But first, I wanted to very quickly go through some of my guests that are coming up in the next weeks. So pay attention. Make sure you listen in on, of course, next week. But the week after that, I have Greenwich First Selectman Fred Camillo coming on. So that is February 19th, Wednesday, February 19th. On the 26th of February, I have John DeBenedictis, and he is the director of undergraduate studies at Manhattanville College. But he'll be talking to those of us who are going through need to learn something or going through another iteration as our careers keep changing around at different phases of our adult lives. And so we'll be talking about that. On March 11th, I have Connecticut State Senator Alex Bergstein coming on to give us an update. And then on March 18th, I have Catherine Curtin from Greenwich Medical Spa, and she'll be talking about all the current the beauty treatments and I don't know what's going on out there in that land exactly, but we're going to hear more about what's keeping people young and beautiful. So
yeah, you don't need any of that.
I don't need any of that. Please. But I have a great guest on tonight. He is a psychotherapist, a public speaker, and he is the author of the relationship-saving book called Independent Enough. So I want everybody to welcome Larry Shashansky. Larry, you're there?
Hi, Noreen. How are you?
I'm doing great. How are you doing?
I'm doing fine, thanks. I'm doing really well. Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
Good. You've been doing a lot of radio shows, correct?
Yep, radio shows, podcasts, speaking, yeah, engagements, yep. Yeah.
So you're a psychotherapist in Rhode Island.
Yep.
And what kind of clients do you typically work with?
I specialize in relationships. I do a lot of couples, a lot of marriages. I do some family therapy, and then I do individuals. I have a general practice that I do, nothing specific other than focusing on relationships.
So. Why did you – I see that the book Independent Enough was copyrighted in 2018. And what compelled you, what inspired you to write the book Independent Enough?
So when I went to graduate school I became interested in family therapy. And ever since then, I've been doing a lot of work on families and couples. And I've always wanted to write a book, and I've just never I've hundreds and thousands of pages of notes and articles that never got published. And then in 1990, I was diagnosed with hepatitis C. Came from my early drug years in the late 60s and early 70s.
Really?
And and I never even knew I had it, but it's basically a virus. It makes you tired, depressed, you got to sleep, you're not clear-minded, not clear-thinking very well, but without really knowing it. I never realized it until I was diagnosed. So I decided in 1990, with my interest in couples and relationships, to drop back a little bit and eat better and exercise more, get a little spirituality to me, focus more on my practice, and try to stay alive long enough until they found the cure. And then, sure enough, 3 or 4 years ago, I was in a phase 3 trial at Beth Israel Hospital in Boston, and within 2 weeks, I was cured. And it was like a miracle, because I'd been in 2 trials of interferon and ribavirin, which had almost killed me. And this was like a miracle. I could think clearly. It was like I knew myself for the first time. I was able to, in a fairly short period of time, put together a good book, get it published, and do the work that I needed to do. So my interest in couples came from my graduate work and the work I've been doing for 40 years. And my ability to write the book and get the word out, so to speak, came because I've had much more clarity in mind and much more energy to do so.
Wow, that's a lot, and congratulations! What a
Thank
blessing
you.
To
yeah, absolutely
have something turned around in 2 weeks that might have seemed like a life sentence to some extent. So,
absolutely. When I first started reading about hepatitis C, I remember I started reading about it at night. I had a lawyer who worked with me who used to do malpractice. He had a number of nurses that did extensive research for me, and they were talking about mortality rates and liver failures and cancers and that kind of thing. And I'd wake up in the morning, I'd be depressed without figuring out why. And finally, I just threw it all away and just started to focus on myself. And again, like I said, stay alive long enough that they found a cure, which they did. And it's really wonderful. It's been a godsend for sure. So that's where I'm at.
So, and you're married at this time?
I've been married for 36 years in May.
I started to read your book, Independent Enough, and so I'll let you tell us, but I did understand that, I don't know if it was during this time, but just in the course of anybody's relationship, there's times that you're like feeling uncomfortable, unhappy. You can project this onto your partner. You can blame it, or you start looking at the relationship and wondering if the relationship's making you unhappy. Can you speak to whether I got that right when I was reading through the front of the book, and how much
sure,
of that?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. We in this culture, in the American culture, our very first knee-jerk reaction is to blame other. That's what we do, whether it's work or friendships or family or intimate partners, marriages. We always, even just the other day I did it, I came down, I was making myself breakfast, and I knocked over a glass, and I broke it on the ground. My wife is sleeping, and the first thing I thought is, darn it, why did she leave this glass up here? And she was sleeping. It's like she wasn't even around. And so I think our knee-jerk reaction is to blame others for our unhappiness and our ill will. And that's a death knell for our relationships and for our own happiness. The other thing we do is criticize or blame ourselves. And so we're either blaming other or blaming ourselves. And what the book is about is that it tries to remove that kind of blame by saying, you know, basically my premise is that if you get what I call that noise, blaming other or blaming ourselves, mm-hmm. if you get that out of our heads, right, and try to clear all that noise out of our heads, then we can do some self-reflection. You know, we can look at ourselves. What part am I playing in the conflict that's being created? Or what part am I creating with this other person that's making me unhappy? Or what part am I playing? Who am I in relation to this other person or these other people that is making my life not what I want it to be? And it's not about personal responsibility. It's about true self-reflection. And so once you clear the noise out of your head, and once you can get that self-reflection about who am I, what am I doing right? What part am I playing? And it's not about analyzing or getting Freudian or you know, going back to childhood or anything. But any interaction that's causing difficulty, who am I and what am I doing?
It's about and from awareness. There,
awareness of self.
Right.
That's exactly right. Some people call that mindfulness kind of thing. So that awareness of self leads to my next step, which is making a decision. But the decision is tied to the self-reflection. For example, if I'm being too dependent, right? What do I need to become more independent? I knock over the glass, I break it, and instantaneously I blame my wife in my head, and then I say, wait, let me get her out of my head, and then I can say to myself, what are you doing? And I say to myself, I'm relying on my wife because I did something that I was clumsy. It was an accident. Why don't you just pick it up? So my decision is not to blame her, to see what I was doing in blaming her, and then just making the decision that, you know, I'm not going to blame her anymore. I'm simply going to pick this up and move on with my day. And so that's the process. And what we need to do in relationships is we need to do that process. We need to step back in the relationship after we made those decisions, and then we got to keep doing this over and over and over and over and over again. And that's what's described in the book, and that's basically what the book is about in a nutshell.
It's interesting because you can say clear your head, but even if you've got to remain conscious, so or aware, as you're saying, or mindful, to catch those voices in our head that are going. And some people, it's worse than others, but it's like there's another part of you that has to stay aware of the dialogue that's going on in your head.
Absolutely.
That's creating victimization.
Right. And that's very, very difficult to do.
Yes.
It's either creating victimization or it's creating our own sense of criticalness or self-judgment. And that's really hard to be aware of because it's like a knee-jerk reaction. You know, I have a granddaughter, and she comes here, and she goes, Caleb hit me, right? And she's in preschool. And so her first knee-jerk is to talk about Caleb, not about herself and what she can do about that. And she's taught that, and I'm taught that, and you're taught that. And all of us are taught that the very first thing we do is we look at other people and all that noise in our head. So that's actually, so if you look at relationships, every relationship we have has an element of dependency in it. And we don't like to admit that. But that noise in our head, the difficulty we have clearing that, is because we actually rely on other people for our well-being. We don't know it. And in our culture, it's all about self-confidence and being independent and being strong. But the reality is every single relationship we're in, there is dependency. There's an element of dependency.
It's now, a necessity, you're saying.
Out of necessity.
Yes.
Absolutely correct. And most dependency is fine, but we don't realize that. What we think in this culture is that you need to be independent for the sake of independence, and I don't buy that because there's a lot of dependency that works between people. It kind of almost bonds us together, and it's perfectly fine. It's only when that dependency creates conflict. And the way that I look at it is all conflict stems from dependency, but not all dependency creates conflict.
Right.
So then what you have is that at the point of conflict, it's about stepping back and look at your own dependency and what that is on the other person, and then shifting that. Not the other dependencies that you have, but only the dependencies that are making you unhappy. Because our unhappiness is created through dependency. It's not other things that we think it is. It's not because we've chosen the wrong person. It's not because the other person won't compromise. It's not because I'm not good enough. It's none of that kind of stuff that we've been taught to believe. You know, there's a saying that you need to choose the right person or the right job to be really happy. Eleanor Roosevelt said it best, it's not about choosing the right person, it's about being the right person.
It's internal. So it's internal work, and that person
right
outside of you is mirroring something back to you. that
absolutely.
That is giving you something that you need to be aware of about yourself.
Absolutely correct. And it's usually not just with that other person. It's usually stuff that we've carried our whole entire life.
Mm-hmm.
And so then that relationship, like you aptly said it, becomes a mirror into our psychological makeup. And that once we look at that makeup, and once we look at that psychological makeup, we can grow from there. And as I grow in relation to you, our relationship grows, and then you grow as well. So it's not a selfish thing. It's not like saying, screw you, I'm going to do whatever I need to do. I'm going to start going now, I'm going to stop, depending on... It's not about that. It's about when we have that mirror into our own psychological makeup, then we say to ourselves, okay, what do I need to grow? And that challenges the relationship to grow as well. So ultimately, everybody would benefit from that. And when we grow and the other person doesn't grow, unfortunately, that's when relationships end.
I have a question for you. I was
reading something
about isolation, that more people now, despite all the technology we have out there and Facebook and phones, that more people feel isolated than ever, and that in particular, men feel isolated. Even if they're in a relationship, they feel isolated because they've been, especially older men, have been brought up with a disconnection, a conditioning to disconnect their feelings, so they don't know where to go. They don't know how to interpret them at times, and they don't know where to go to express them.
Right.
So I don't know, and that they often feel guilt. I don't know, you've been a psychotherapist for a few decades. Did you find something like that?
Sure. What happens is we, as men, growing up, learn how to withdraw. We withdraw from those feelings that you're talking about that are difficult. We withdraw when there's a problem. And the closer we are to people, the more our tendency is to withdraw. Because we get hopeless. Because what happens is that as men, when we do a conflict and it doesn't get resolved, our tendency is just to back away and withdraw from that. The reality is that when you do conflict, most conflict in relationships are never going to be solved. You can pick three or four issues in any relationship, and you're never going to solve them. What you do is you evolve them over time. Like I said, my wife and I have been married for about 36 years in May. And we still have the same issues as we had the first year of marriage, but they don't look the same. How we talk about them, how we argue about them, how we deal with them looks different the first year of marriage than it did the 10th year of marriage, than it did the 15th year of marriage, than it did the 25th, than it did the 35th. We have evolved our issues forward. But what happens with men, generally speaking, is that once we don't have the patience to do that evolution of issues and conflict. And so what we do is that if I can't blow you away, if I can't win an argument, if we have to talk about things more than once, forget it, I'm out of here. And what happens is that's withdrawal. And we continue to withdraw, and we continue to withdraw, and we continue to withdraw, and we become isolated. Now, I'm from a very boisterous family. And I remember this. Just this classic scene where there were my sisters and there's uncles and there was, you know, cousins and aunts and everybody. And everybody, the object in my family, it was and still is that you don't really listen to anybody. It's just who can speak loudest and who has the final word. And so as you're seeing all this kind of like mini chaos going on, we're discussing politics and sports and religion and all kinds of stuff. I look over and there my father is. And he's got a Golf Digest opened up, right? And he's somewhere on Pebble Beach, right, with all the chaos going on around him. He has totally withdrawn from everything that's happening around him, and he absorbed somewhere in California. And this was in Virginia where we're sitting. And I looked around at my uncle, and my uncle is listening. He's got earplugs in, and he's listening to a football game on the radio. And each man that I looked at was separated and disconnected in their own way. And what I realized, it was mostly the women that were engaging in the conversations. And so that's a typical kind of thing that happens. our tendency is to do the conflict. If it doesn't work out, if we can't win, if nothing gets resolved, our tendency is to back away from it. And that's where you get the isolation. For women, women go quiet with our isolation when we back
silent,
up.
The silent treatment?
It's this sense of hopelessness that women get.
Right, I can relate to it.
Right, and we will get quiet because women get tired of going to the same base and not getting anything back. It's not even not evolution. Women are taught to be cooperative and to engage. But when you're engaging with a rock, you eventually give up. And you don't necessarily withdraw, you just go quiet. You lose your voice. I see that in therapy a lot, where women lose their voices.
Right.
They lose who they are. They give up who they are. You know, my wife's never done that. She's always been on, if something needs to be said, she's on top of it. And sometimes she's aggressive about it, but at least she's in there. And that's what this is about.
Women start to just acquiesce because they
absolutely
don't know how to. I think we're conditioned.
Break through that wall.
Yeah, I think
you don't know how to break through that wall of silence because it, under the guise of being cooperative, it's not about being confrontational.
Uh-huh.
It's about being cooperative. And see, you have to hurt my feelings. Right? My wife has to hurt my feelings.
I see.
She has to be somewhat insensitive to me to say, Larry, what the hell are you doing?
Uh-huh.
Talk to me for God's sake. You can't do this to me, Larry. You can't be quiet for 3 days. And I go, well, but you don't really want to deal with this. She goes, yes, I do. You don't want, and then we get into it back and forth.
Uh-huh.
But she has to be persistent. She has to say, forget about how you feel, Larry. And it's not that she's being mean-spirited. But she has to put her priorities of dealing in this relationship above my feelings. And that's what a lot of women can't do. They don't want to hurt other. You're socialized not to hurt other. We're socialized to blow people out of the water. Women are socialized not to hurt other. So your tendencies when I get quiet is to just lose your voice. My wife, she'll lose her voice for a day or so, but after that, it's done. She's not putting up with it anymore. It's just not going to happen. And so she'll come after me. And it'll anger me so much, I'll go back after her, and then we can enter into a dialogue.
And then I think also with women, there's a heightened, I don't know if this is true, there's a heightened sense of fear of abandonment, that if you
absolutely
express yourself, he is out of there. You know what I mean?
Right.
It's like, especially
right
in this culture right where there's like dating online
right
and things like this. It,
right.
It's like,
right,
all I want to do is try to improve the little things in this relationship.
Right.
But it seems to get so blown out of proportion. And then
right
there is a heightened sense of abandonment, really by both
right
parties. But I really,
right,
you know, I can only speak
by
from
both
the
parties
point of view of a woman, that there's a lot of fear around this, that maybe I could just let this go and, you know, maybe it's not that big a deal, and even questioning.
And you give up your voice.
Yeah, yeah, you
absolutely
give up, you acquiesce
right
over and over.
One of the biggest variables in unhappy relationships is fear.
Mm-hmm.
That you're going to hurt somebody, that you're not enough, that the other person's going to leave. That for women, that you're going to be a bitch. For men, it's going to be too aggressive. It's, you know, we have all these fears about, and the bottom line is it's a loss of relationship. We are afraid to lose relationship. And particularly women. Women are afraid, and men are too, by the way. Men are very afraid, but we play it out in a different way. And for women, that backing away is because of that fear of loss of relationship.
And
exactly right.
And when men play it out in a different way, how do they do it?
We go silent.
You just take.
We punish.
Uh-huh,
uh-huh. We punish. And we give women the message, don't cross the line because you could lose this relationship.
Right, there's an aggression there.
Right, I am so angry. I am so hurt. I'm going to withdraw from you, and don't you dare try to cross that line because I'm going to leave you if you do.
And it's go ahead, I'm sorry.
Go ahead. No, go ahead.
No, I understand that maybe there's a sense, because men and women are trying, they both want the same thing, but there's they just don't understand each other that well. And just as a culture, we're not really conditioned to understand our feelings or express, understand our needs, be able to express them. So it's like such precarious ground. But I forgot what I was going to say.
See, for me, it's not an issue of understanding our feelings.
Uh-huh.
For me, it's an issue of if there's something not working, what do I need to do about that? You know, maybe it's about expressing feelings. Maybe it's not about expressing feelings. Like when my wife says, you can't withdraw from me, she's not expressing how she feels. You know, she's not saying, look, this really makes me feel bad, or I feel isolated, or I feel lonely. She says, you can't do this, right? Now, if you're in a therapy session, that may not look very good for a therapist. But my wife knows me as I know her, and I do similar things with her, when she won't deal with what I think we need to deal with. But the bottom line is that it's not so much, there's no one thing that does it. It's not about necessarily expressing yourself. You know, like compassion and love, for example, is not always about being kind. Sometimes you got to be really tough. Sometimes you got to really set a limit in order to establish compassion and love in your relationship. So it's not always about how I feel or expressing my feelings. It's about, okay, I'm jamming up in my relationship. Let me get the noise out of my head and let me figure out what I am doing and what do I need to do to take this step forward.
And
that's what it's about.
And if you're, oh, I know where I was going before is that I understood that men, but also women, often feel inadequate in the relationship.
Very much so.
Yeah. Is it true that it's more of men feeling inadequate?
No, I think we all feel inadequate.
We all feel inadequate.
Because we're all inadequate.
Uh-huh. Okay.
When it comes to relationships, look what we're taught. Uh-huh. We're taught that you got to compromise to make a good relationship, right? I think that's one of the biggest myths in relationships that you can ever imagine. Because compromise is about, I'll give something up I don't want to give up. You give up something you don't want to give up so we can create peace. The problem with that is if I give up something I don't want to give up, I'm going to be watching you to make sure you do your part. And inevitably, I'm going to find out that you're not doing your part, and I'm going to think I am doing my part. So it lays the seeds of mistrust and conflict, but it's an easy way out. But what are we taught? How many times have I read or seen compromise is an essential part of a relationship? My mind is compromise is not an essential part of a relationship. It's a shortcut to doing the hard work that I'm talking about doing. So that's one myth. There's another myth. Find the right person and you will be happy,
mm-hmm.
right? So then if I'm not happy, you're not the right person. No. Like I said, it's like Eleanor Roosevelt said. It's not about finding the right person. It's about being the right person. What do I need to do? And there are so many of those kinds of myths that we have grown up with that all of us are inadequate. Or like you're implying earlier today, say how you feel. I have an older sister, Noreen, that if I say how I feel to this older sister, she will rip my throat out, run me over, and leave me for dead. So I have learned I can't relate to her in that way. I can't have this honest discourse about my feelings, my deep feelings towards what if I'm hurt or if I'm feeling usurped or however I'm feeling. I can't do that. I have to relate to her in a different way. There was a writer in the 50s. His name was Abraham Heschel. And one of the things he said was, in order to be happy, you have to learn how to develop different sensibilities to different people. So that doesn't necessarily say about how you feel. Although when you go to therapy, they go, how do you feel about this? And that may be a good thing to do, but a lot of times it's not. A lot of times it's about, what do you need to do? Who do you need to become? How do you need to grow to work out the conflict that you're in? And we're not taught this. And that's why all of us feel pretty inadequate in relationships.
So when
the same conflict keeps coming up over and over and
over. Right, that same pattern that needs to be addressed just will keep coming around.
And
people get exasperated. And we're coming up on Valentine's Day. There's people, I mean, typically nobody wants to break up their relationship, but they feel helpless, what advice would you give, especially where a dynamic's been created where the couple start to feel like the only option they have is to give up? What advice would you give to that couple?
So in my experience, there's two ways that relationships split. One is that out of frustration and I've had it, I can't do it anymore, I'm going to leave the relationship. So they break up, right?
Mm-hmm.
The other is to make a commitment to that personal growth I'm talking about,
mm-hmm.
to changing self in relation to other. And that what happens is that I then can lead the relationship in the direction I want that relationship to go. So, for example, if I want a loving relationship,
mm-hmm.
for me to look at myself and say, Larry, what are you doing? What part are you playing in not creating a loving relationship?
Mm-hmm.
And I look at myself and I go, well, I'm kind. I give gifts. I do this. I tell my wife I love her. I do that. Why don't I feel like this is a loving relationship?
Mm-hmm.
And what I've had to work on in my life is how not to be so nice, because I'm always too nice.
I can relate to
that. If you're always being the nice, yeah, absolutely.
Uh-huh.
And if I'm always being the nice guy, I am not creating a mutual relationship,
right?
One of equality, one of equanimity. And so what I've had to learn is how to say, no, honey, I'm not going to do that.
No, honey, I'm not going to do that. Let me write that down.
Right. No, honey, I'm not going to do that.
Uh-huh.
Right? In a decent way.
Uh-huh.
But that helps me create a loving relationship.
Uh-huh.
Now, if I start to do that and my wife doesn't like that and it creates more conflict and I continue to grow to be assertive and to find that balance between nice and setting appropriate limits, and she still doesn't like that, we grow apart.
Uh-huh.
And as we grow apart, that's when we split. So in my mind, for Valentine's Day,
uh-huh.
if in my relationship, I make a commitment to do what I need to do to see if this relationship is going to work.
Okay, good.
What changes do I need to make?
Good.
It's not about I'm going to love you. It's about what can I do to create the kinds of relationships I want. It hasn't worked to date, so what else do I need to do? It's the relationship of it's the commitment to self in relation to the relationship.
And if you leave, you take yourself with you. Inevitably, you might start out the next relationship very nicely, but inevitably, if you haven't healed or learned to deal with those issues that you have inside yourself, you're going to just take that off to the next relationship with you.
No question.
So,
no question. Exactly so, right. But if you do the work,
right,
you will establish a different relationship next.
Larry,
and that's why I.
Go ahead.
That's why I believe that you can have any kind of relationship you want, regardless of what somebody else is doing.
And be happy, because that happiness is from, well, it's not that you're happy all the time, but that it's that sense of contentment is going to come from within. And generally, the happier, the more content you are, the more space you're leaving for the other party to balance out too.
The more work you do on yourself in relation to other, yes, that's true. Exactly right.
Okay, we're going to go to break, Larry. Folks, I'm talking to Larry Shishansky. He's a psychotherapist, he's a public speaker, and he is the author of the relationship-saving book, Independent Enough. We'll be right back.
If you're traveling the northbound Connecticut Turnpike from the state line up to Route 7 in Norwalk, it's about a 30-minute ride, and the northbound Merritt, a 36-minute ride now from the state line up to Route 7. Use your power to cure IBS. Join the Crohn's and Colitis Foundation at Spin for Crohn's and Colitis Cures. Get started at spin4.org. I'm Jay Trelase in the 1490 Traffic Center.
From the WGCH Weather Center, Sleet and freezing rain develops tonight, 30. Any wintry precip quickly changing to rain tomorrow, becoming breezy, 35 to 40. Periods of rain tomorrow night with a low near 35, and periods of rain tapering to showers Friday near 40. Mostly sunny Saturday, colder, 30 to 35, becoming mostly cloudy Sunday. A few afternoon snow showers, 35 to 40. I'm meteorologist Aaron Zalkman on 1490 WGCH.
Are you a business owner who's suffering from what I call the entrepreneur's dilemma? That means you have a successful business, but you're so caught up in operations that you are overwhelmed, maybe you're capital constrained, or you just know that you can scale your business to another level, but you need help doing that. This is Noreen Ehrlich from Defiant Hustle Radio. I'm an executive coach based in Greenwich, Connecticut. For over two decades, I worked as a CFO and CPA in Wall Street's fast-paced real estate private equity industry, where I helped start up and turn around hundreds of underperforming businesses. Based on this know-how, I created a 100-day plan that I tailor to your business to make sure that you streamline operations, drive performance, and generate profits fast. Don't wait. Take advantage of my free 50-minute consultation by visiting my website at NoreenEhrlich.com or by calling me at 475-333-2173. Hi, everybody. Welcome back to Defiant Hustle Radio. This is Noreen Ehrlich, and I am very fortunate to have on the phone with us tonight psychotherapist, public speaker, and author of the relationship book, Independent Enough. It's Larry Shashansky. Larry?
Yes.
Okay.
Hi, Noreen.
So welcome back. Here. So, Larry, you and I were talking before the show, and we had something in common. So this is not on the necessarily on the relationship front, but you were telling me that this is the last radio show you'll be doing.
Yep.
And arguably the last promotion you'll be doing for the book, Independent Enough.
Right.
Is the book, it was a free download. Is it still available online?
No, because the website's closed down. As of last Friday, I closed down the website and all the social medias as well.
So
it can be gotten. It can be gotten on Amazon.
Okay, so
either through audio or the print.
And you directed me when I wrote to you. I was like, Larry, sorry, let's coordinate. And you directed me to a blog article you wrote, which is also your last article, I assume, called
Last Blog,
Letting Go.
Yep.
And I'm going to turn it over to you, but I understood that there is something where we take on initiatives, right? We're in a culture, talk about conditioning, we're in a culture that keeps saying, you know, take on the new initiative, you can do it, never give up, plow through any obstacles in order to achieve your greatness and your passionate. I've been started a business a few years ago, and I understand that is maybe solid advice and maybe not. Why don't you tell our listeners what the gist of the article was, Letting Go, that you wrote?
Okay. So I've been, I wrote the book a couple of years ago, and I've been, quote, branding and marketing the book for about 3 years now. I've written for national publications, both online and hard copy. I have written blogs for organizations. I've written my own blog for about 4 or 5 years now to establish a quote platform. I've done speaking engagements. I've done podcasts. I've done radio programs, both national and international. Not many international, but a couple few international, including Canada and Europe and New Zealand and that kind of thing. And I was doing a lot of work. I was doing a lot, there's a lot of moving parts when you do this, both in social media. I'd hired a marketing firm. I had a social media person. And even at that, I was doing just a lot of work.
Doing branding and
branding
and
right.
promoting.
Right, branding and promoting.
Okay.
And what started, there's a couple of things that happened. It's a lot of work. I mean, just a ton of work. And a lot of money as well. So it's work and money and energy and time. But the bottom line for me is I got to the point where I started to realize, what am I doing here? You know, what is my real purpose? And why I wrote the book and what I'm trying to do, and what I really want to try to do, the thing that really pulls me when I do therapy in my private practice, is when I can feel a connection to people and the therapy seems to be helpful for other people.
Mm-hmm.
That seems to be the crux for me. So that's my passion. And so all those messages you just talked about actually got in the way of my passion, you know, the branding, the getting out there, the spending the time, and you can do it, and whatever you can want to accomplish, you can accomplish. All those things started to cover over what my real purpose was, and that's to help people. And so I started to look at this, and I started to say to myself, Larry, what are you really doing? Are you really helping the numbers of people that you really think you're helping? I mean, I'm building in popularity, yes. But are you really helping people? And what I began to realize, the answer to that is no. Generally speaking, I'm not helping people through speaking engagements, through podcasts, through radio spots, and not because I don't have a good message or because I'm not sincere or because I don't have what it takes. Not because of that. It's because growth is a process that truly happens over time. And I found myself promoting myself more than I was helping people. So, like, I'd get feedback on blogs, just to give you an example.
Mm-hmm.
And people would say to me, Larry, I read your blog this week, and it was really tremendous. And I'd say to them, well, how did it help? And they said, well, it was really cute the way your granddaughter calls you Papa Shoe. Or it's really terrific the way you jumped off that 35-foot cliff into the pool of cool water. But people weren't saying, this helped me do X, Y, and Z. The blog started to become more entertaining, I think, than helpful. And in my mind, my mind's eye, each blog was meant to help people, to carry some sort of message that would help people grow and move in their relationships. But that was getting lost. And I think this whole thing became branding Larry and getting independent enough and branding independent enough that it was starting to lose meaning for me. And I was just dotting I's and crossing T's like multiple times a day between sessions. I'd have to get back to people. I'd have to write people. I'd have to send out stuff on overnight for podcasts and radio programs. I was writing for when you write nationally for newspapers like Boston Globe, Chicago Times, and Chicago Tribune, and those kinds of things. It's because reporters have this website, and when they're doing a story on something, they put out the word about, do you have an expert who knows about relationships? And so they call you, and you have like 12 hours to put out an article on relationships and whatever they're focused on. And so it became more of that kind of churning out as opposed to, Larry, take your time, see what is more helpful, see what is truly beneficial, what is going to be more helpful for people. So all of that hecticness, all of that dotting the I's and crossing the T's, and it was overwhelming at times, but that's not why I gave it up. I gave it up because that seemed to overshadow me actually helping people. So as I've let go of that, I've been able to sit quietly with myself and to think with myself, Larry, what is your next move? And I don't know what that is. But what I don't want to do is I don't want to buy what you said earlier about follow your passion and you can do it and no matter what you do. Because for me, that becomes chasing something. And I don't want to chase anything anymore, right? I want to sit with who I am. I want to sit with my passion and develop myself towards that. I don't want to have that frenetic, got to do this, got to do that, got to do that. And if you work hard enough, slave hard enough, you do enough, you'll be accomplished. Mm-hmm. That's not my goal anymore.
It's a way of valuing. It's like society keeps moving the goalpost, but it's like we're just how we try to value ourselves, and we keep putting. You got to write a case study. You got to go speak. You have to find the next guest, and after a while, I wrote an article last year that was popular. It was called Decision Fatigue, but that creative energy is really tiring. It's exhilarating while you're creating something, but it can be a lot of pressure.
And I think the reason it gets tiring is because it overrides what we really want to do.
Uh-huh.
What is our intent? Why am I doing what I am doing? Mm-hmm. Again, it's that self-reflection.
Mm-hmm.
Why am I, quote, branding? And we get lost in who we are and what we value and what we want gets lost in the melees of all this craziness about how many likes you got, and how many comments you got, and how many hits, and Google puts out these analytics about your website and who's listening to your program and just on and I and my purpose and my values gets just inundated and lost under that whole thing.
It's an illusion. It's an illusion of value. It's another illusion that got set up. But and also the toll it takes, because I found myself working for my consultants because I did a show last week on the gig economy and some of the drawbacks of the gig economy, not just for the gig contractors, but also for the small business owner who's got to get out there and do what they need to do for their business, right? You're a therapist.
Right.
I do business development. And I need to get out there. You need to get out there. But yet you're spending all your time taking meetings, correcting things, trying to create the next new thing so that they can get out there and brand it. And it takes a toll on you emotionally, physically, mentally, and financially.
No question about it. And at some point, for me anyway, I had to step back and go, wait, I need to get off this bus, and I need to really reevaluate self and my world and what I want to do.
Mm-hmm.
And it's tough because I keep wanting to be drawn back into that kind of fast-paced stuff.
Right.
Because I still think I've got something to say. But I really have to sit with myself and figure this out. I've got to sit with this space. I've got to sit with this void. I've got to sit with not knowing and being somewhat confused about where I'm going and what my future is and all that kind of stuff. I've got to feel comfortable with that. And however long it takes, it takes. So I'm reading what I want to read. I'm doing more of what I want to do. And I don't know where this is going to lead, but I know I can't fill that void or that space quickly. And like I said before, I definitely don't want to chase anymore. It just doesn't work.
I think there's
all the reasons you've talked about.
I think that there's a universal push, if you will, towards reprioritizing, towards purging, towards simplification. What is actually enriching my life? Who is actually enriching my life versus just chasing after something? And I love it. I love a challenge, but I do think at some point I kept saying to people, I just need to catch my breath. I just need to catch my breath.
Right.
I couldn't even make another decision because I
Right.
It was just too much coming at me.
Right. Right. And that's what it takes to be successful. Too much coming after you.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
That's exactly right. Or successful in the terms of what you said at the beginning of this topic. You know, that anybody can accomplish anything. You just got to push yourself. You got to be willing to sacrifice and all that stuff. Yeah, you're exactly right.
Good. Well, let's end on that note. No, actually, I'm kidding. But I do try to tell my whether I do executive coaching. So some of the clients are like, I'm going to go out and start my own business and follow my passion and this and that. But I don't tell them what to do. I do try and work with them to understand better whether they can get their needs met in their existing situation or not, and what they're really looking for. Before they just quit their jobs or and go off to start their next passion, because I think that there's so much everybody's doing it, and there's pictures and images and graphics, but it is it's not an easy climb. It's not an easy climb to go out and be an entrepreneur.
You know, and I think the issue for me is not that it's too hard.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's okay for it not to be an easy climb. It's okay for it to be difficult. But when we lose our primary purpose in doing it,
mm-hmm. Good
when
point.
We lose
yes.
who we are in doing it, mm-hmm. then that's a problem. I don't mind knocking myself out. I don't mind working really hard, staying up late, losing sleep, and do it. But when I lose me mm-hmm. and my purpose and what gets me into this to start off with, then I've got a problem.
I started working with them, and I said, stop writing articles. you have to go out there and just go back to your old school relationships. You don't have to go to San Francisco and Texas.
Right.
You live in New Jersey. Right. You live right next to New York City. You know a lot of people. These are relationships you have. Everybody you know knows 10 other people. Why don't you just reconnect? And you're going to have to work through that fear of rejection or find somebody else to reconnect with those people you know already and start to find your clients. Old school, word of mouth, you can still do some branding
right.
and things
exactly
like that.
Right.
But don't expect
exactly
the digital
right.
age to save you.
Absolutely. And you do it more at a pace that makes sense to you because you don't lose yourself that way.
And you
form, don't lose yourself in the digital age, and you form better relationships.
And
There's
you
no
form
question.
Those relationships, I think, that we're all, that we are all looking, missing. We don't even remember that we're missing that nourishment in
right.
many cases that we think we're getting, but it's not happening. Even in you're the psychotherapist, the relationship psychotherapist,
right.
but even in
right.
personal intimate relationships, we have really
right.
lost so much of our ability to express ourselves and
right.
through a text. How do you really know, you know, how do you really connect if you don't really connect? So Larry, we have one more minute. What advice would you...
It's somewhat hard to hear you because I'm listening to music now.
You're listening to music now?
On your end.
Oh, really? Is there something coming through, Bob? Oops.
Okay, that's better, yeah.
Oh, sorry, Bob.
That's okay.
I'm feeling good. But anyway, so we have just a few moments here. I want to thank you very much for being our guest tonight, Larry, and I wish you
yeah,
the best
welcome.
Of luck.
Thank you so much, and thank you for having me. And Noreen, I truly wish you the best of luck as well.
Thank you very much. And folks out there listening, there was some great advice given to you. I hope you take it. And I look forward to talking with you next week on Defy and Hustle Radio. Signing off here, this is Noreen. Bye-bye.
AM 1490 and FM 105.5 WGCH Greenwich.
Special report, impeachment verdict. President Trump was acquitted today in his Senate impeachment trial on abuse of power and obstruction of Congress charges. But Democratic Senator Chuck Schumer cautions there is a giant asterisk next to President Trump's acquittal.
The asterisk says he was acquitted without facts. He was acquitted without a fair trial, and it means that his acquittal is virtually valueless.
Correspondent Manu Raju says there could be some backlash against Republican Senator Mitt Romney, the only member of his party to vote to convict on a